Welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglekatma, Shawepam, Shtatlium, Sioux, and Chicoltean nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together. I'm so happy to have Marianne McLean on with me today. So Marianne, can you just start by introducing yourself and maybe tell us a bit about your nursing background?
Sure. I'm the clinical nurse specialist for skin, wound, and ostomy for Interior Health. Been a nurse for a long time, since the 80s, and kind of worked all over the place. I've worked in community, I've worked in long-term care, acute care sites, cardiac units, emergency departments, small hospitals, big hospitals. I worked for an independent First Nations community. So my background is very broad, and I ended up in skin and wound care by accident.
Right? Oh. But I imagine you've always been interested.
Yes.
And skin and wound. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it has changed significantly in the last 30 to 40 years. Yeah. Huge growth.
Yeah. Incredible. Now, the question I want to ask you is, I know it's a big question, but can you remind us, can you take us kind of back to basics and remind us about how wounds heal? You don't have to give us, you know, a physiology lecture,
right.
But could you just remind us about what's important?
Okay, I'll first tell you how the wound's supposed to heal and then where it sometimes gets stuck. So when you have an injury, so right away when you have the injury, the body makes a clot, right? You have hemostasis and the body makes a clot. And then from that and over the next 4 days, the body spends the time cleaning the wound. So you get different kinds of cells, macrophages, and different cells coming into the wound. I think of them as garbage trucks, coming into the wound and emptying out all the slough and the debris and that sort of stuff. And you might see more purulent drainage, but that's not necessarily infection. That's just the garbage getting removed from the wound by the body. So after 4 days, ideally, you would be moving into the proliferation phase, is when you grow new blood vessels. So when you see bumps in the wounds, that's a good thing. New blood vessels, new tissue, new structures. So if it was a skin cell, hair follicles, that sort of thing should happen. So from injury to finishing growing new tissue is usually 21 days or 3 weeks. That's where that number comes from when you hear us ask, you know, so much in 3 weeks. And then the last part can take up to 2 years. So that is the maturation phase. So we tend to say the wound has closed, not healed. So when the wound closes, it takes up to 2 years for the body to make stronger cartilage, a stronger scar, and strengthen over time. So if it's a pressure injury and you're sitting on a spot, you got to be way more careful than say it's on your forearm and you rarely touch it. And that's why sometimes the wound care nurses will be like, protect the area and that sort of thing. But what happens sometimes is for some reason, so it could be the state of the individual, they're very sick. Their body is not able to heal because they're busy staying alive. Okay, so the body cannot heal it in 21 days. So that is no longer what we call an acute wound or a wound that we expect to heal at a certain rate. Then it becomes a chronic wound and it has nothing to do with where you are. It's just the expected healing rate. So chronic wound will not heal an expected rate. And it generally gets stuck in inflammation, right, in the cleaning phase. And that's interesting because that also looks like infection. So one of the common things that happens is people think, oh, the wound is infected when it's just inflamed. So that's why the wound care nurses will be very interested in, is it more than 2 centimeters from the edge? Because if it's 2 centimeters or in, it's probably inflammation, which is normal part of the body. So those cells going in there doing their job. But that's generally how wounds are supposed to heal. So generally in community, sometimes long-term care, we say give them a goal of healing. So the goal is today, right now, you have the ability to heal. So the goal is to heal it. Sometimes your body is so stressed or your life situation is unstable that right now, today, you don't have the ability to heal, but you could in the future, or you could if something changes. And then there's the ones that will never, ever get better. And those are called non-healable. So those are their three categories in terms of wound healing.
Oh, amazing. I love wounds. I find them so interesting. I'm not an expert, but I am an enthusiast. I love wound care. And so that is so interesting for me too. I'm already learning lots from you today. And you've hinted at some things that help wounds to heal. And those might be things like nutrition, that sort of thing. And then there's other factors that prevent wounds from healing. Could you say more about maybe what some of those things are?
Sure. Sometimes if you say you have a lot of swelling in your legs and it's because of, say, venous disease or something like that, if you're not able to walk, then you're going to have more swelling. So your mobility will actually affect your ability to heal, because when you're mobile, the calf muscles in your legs contract, and that helps pushes the fluid back up the leg. So if you're unable to do that, that would affect your ability to heal. But then we say, hey, move your foot around and do ankle circles. There's ways around it. But generally, if your blood sugar is quite high, so if you're over 10, it's unlikely that in this moment right now, you're going to heal. It doesn't mean you will never heal. It just means it's going to be very slow. If you're anemic, so your hemoglobin is 100 or less, you tend to not have the capacity because you're not getting enough blood flow to the cells. Actually, you know, the big one is nutrition. Nutrition is the one people forget. It's really important. So if the body doesn't have enough nutrients, how do you expect it to heal really healthy, strong tissue?
Do we focus mostly on protein with healing?
We tend to focus on, people go a little crazy.
Okay.
So it's really protein. Sorry, you can tell that I'm in healthcare. Yes. So protein, in terms of increasing the protein, now you don't have to go and have a steak, right? So when you're saying increasing your protein, ideally you would consult with a dietitian, but that's not always possible. Mm-hmm. If you can't, you can call 811 and they have dietitians who could give you general broad advice. Things like a piece of apple, if that's what you like to eat, with a little bit of peanut butter on it. Mm-hmm. If you don't have many funds, you can take skim milk powder and stir it into your coffee, you could stir it into your mashed potatoes, you could put it into your food. So protein in any form, and water, fluids.
Oh,
right. Mm-hmm. A dehydrated cell doesn't heal as quickly as a nicely hydrated cell. So having something to drink, and I'm not talking coffee, I'm talking water. Yes. And your fluids come from what you eat as well. So there's water in the fluids you eat. And when we're talking vitamin zinc is a good one. Okay. But we would never have you take something forever. And you really need to have a deficiency in your lab work before we would say, hey, take something extra.
Okay.
So I might say, if you're going to eat citrus, you know, have a quarter of an orange and eat more protein in your diet than you do now. And see how it goes from there.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking is a big one in all healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, and people, you know, they get upset. But even if you can just reduce the amount you're smoking, that will have a better outcome. And particularly if it's a lower leg wound due to arterial disease, if you're smoking, you won't heal. It's just the way it is. So the plan would be the one where we're going to manage it until at some point we're able to help you heal. Barriers to healing. If suddenly your comorbidities are unstable, so you have other health concerns that are unstable, and so you have a medication change or that sort of thing, or you need to see your doctor, you have COPD. Right now you're unstable. You have a cold or a flu. Your body won't have the same capacity to heal as when things are going well. Stress in your life is another factor, right? If you have a partner who's really unwell and you're worried about them, that will affect your ability to heal. Sleep is another one that we take for granted, but it's a big one. So there's lots patients can do for themselves. But again, it's that learning piece and spending the time teaching, so that they understand the importance of what they're doing. So activity, diet, taking your medications as directed, following up with your appointments as needed, and, you know, self-care, taking care of yourself is a big one.
It's, well, on the one hand, reassuring, but maybe on the other hand, disappointing that the things that help us to heal are the things we already know are good for us. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Good nutrition and exercise and reducing smoking and all of those things. And maybe we would like maybe we would like you to tell us if we use this special wound care product that will heal a wound, but it's not as simple as that, is it?
No. I like to say the dressing never heals the wound. Mm-hmm. It's the individual, so you have to look at the whole person. So if somebody, I have somebody who was stable and their wound is healing at a certain trajectory, and suddenly it's worse, I don't think about the wound, I think about what has changed in the person. Mm-hmm. What's mm-hmm. different? So you also need to look at their lifestyle. Like if they normally have their leg up and they're resting and they're wearing compression socks and it's a leg wound, and they suddenly went on a trip and their leg is down more, it's not that the wound is worse, it's that the situation or the lifestyle behaviors have changed. So I wouldn't change my plan. I would just say, oh, okay, once you have your leg back up again, let's see what happens. So people often assume it's infected when it's could be something in the client's life that is impacting the wound. So you got to look at the whole person, not the wound itself.
Great. That's good advice for us in all of the nursing that we do, right? You want to look at your patient. So excellent. Yes. Great. And now, Marianne, you mentioned non-healable wounds. Is that the right phrase?
Yes.
Non-healable wounds. What are our goals then? If my patient has a non-healable wound, what does that mean to me as the nurse?
So that means surgical intervention is not possible. There are no interventions that the client wants or that the client could have that's going to make this better. So we know that this wound will get worse. So what's important to the patient? It's usually often associated with end of life, but not always. So it's usually pain control, odor control, and quality of life, right? So it has to be practical so that they can live their life and be comfortable. So I'm not going to use anything that the client doesn't want and that is going to impede their quality of life. So it's usually pain control and odor control that are the most important.
That's helpful to know. Yeah, again, you know, being patient-centered, and that's so wonderful to hear that from you.
So for example, I have a cancer that has broken through my skin and I have weepy lesions on my body that will say maybe it's a breast or an abdomen that we cannot manage. And in terms of surgical, it's too late or too risky. So what I'm going to do is use dressings that don't breathe to contain the odor, right? So that the client is more comfortable. Use dressings that are the most comfortable for the client. And sometimes if it's end of life, we might use things that don't make sense in terms of cost, but it has more to do with quality of life for the patient. At times we might use debridement if that debridement is going to help with the quality of life issues, not to make the wound better, not to clean it for healing, but to clean it so that maybe possibly odor reduction, if that will be effective. But sometimes that just makes things worse. So you have to be very client specific.
Okay, wonderful. Now you have this huge portfolio and you're very busy. You're a very busy person. And I'm wondering if, you know, from your lens, do you see the same thing over and over, possibly, about key pieces that get forgotten by nurses about skin and wound care? Is there anything that you see a pattern?
There are certain patterns that are common. The one is that we are assisting the client in healing the wound. So we're not going to do it for them. So if you're in an acute care setting, your focus is in the moment in making a plan. But at the same time, it has to be realistic so that when they go home, it's something that can be continued. Even if it's a community program, it has to be something that the client can continue. It has to be realistic and affordable to the client. We can't just use anything that you see on TV. It has to be evidence-based and it has to fall within what Tira Health is able to provide. But at the same time, it has to be something that, should it become a wound that's non-healable or maintenance in terms of right now, it's not going to get better. What is realistic for the patient? So teaching is a big one. I think teaching is the most important and it gets least amount of attention. So from the very first visit, you should involve the patient in their care in terms of teaching and teach based on what you think they're receptive to. So it can just be in the beginning explaining what you're doing. And then you might say to the client, you know, I've noticed that you have a little bit of, you know, some extra weight on the waist. You have some swelling in your legs. So I have some options for you. We can talk about losing a little bit of weight so you get better lymphatic drainage, adding therapies like compression and wrapping, or making a plan that you can do yourself at home. So of those, is there anything that you're interested in? And they'd be like, well, What about that compression wrap? Oh, okay, so we can talk about that. And then if the client is interested and if the client is able to tolerate it, then that's something we would use. So when the client says, I had to take them off, they're not non-compliant. My care plan wasn't correct for this person at this time. So I need to revamp my plan. So I go to something else. Maybe I'm going to go, importance of good skin hygiene. Really important for you to regularly wash and apply moisturizers to you. Something simple, something they can do and be successful, and then build from there. I think we're a little excited about helping them along and make the plans too complex and the patient becomes overwhelmed because the wound is only part of their issue. It's not their whole health issue. So it has to be something that works within their life and what they want to do. So teaching is a big one. Wound cleansing and irrigation. There are times you should not irrigate and there are times you should not pack because it puts a patient at risk of harm. So generally the magic number is about 15 centimeters. So if you probe in 15 centimeters and you cannot touch the base all the way around, you don't put anything in there because the risk of developing a seroma or the risk of the packing getting sucked into the cavity are too high. So you would not do that. You would just cleanse the wound you see and you would cleanse the skin and then you would ask for help. So you would reach out to your wound care nurse or your NSWAC or your whatever term you use for assistance and they would help you or even the surgeon if that happened to be the case. And not asking for help soon enough. If you have a wound and you expect it to heal at a certain rate and it doesn't, the dressing will not help it. Your plan is not correct. We need to reevaluate and maybe reach out to others who can help us. For example, I had a patient, I think it had been 2 months and nothing had changed. And I'm going, wow, that's a long time. Now this is an exception. And I said, well, let's see if the physician agrees that maybe infectious disease needs to be involved. So we did that. And when they got there, the person was septic, but had no symptoms. Because chronic wounds do not flag signs of infection like an acute wound, because the body's, it's been going on so long, the body's kind of like, oh, I don't feel like it. I'm not going to make it red. I'm not going to bother with inflammation. I'm not going to bother with certain things because it's been going on so long that the body just stops showing those signs. It's best to reach out and see if you can make a better plan. Mm-hmm. And it might not be you. It might be another department, right? So reach out sooner. Don't wait so long.
I really appreciate your approach to making things work well for the patient and kind of meeting them where they are on their journey. I'm really appreciative of the way that you described that just now. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm wondering, so can you tell me, when you are assessing a wound, can you walk me through your process? What are the things that you look for?
Okay, so the wound itself or the person? My assessment starts when the person walks in the door.
Excellent.
I'm watching them walk. Are they leaning to one side? Does the knee bend? Does the hip moving? Like, I'm watching the whole person as they come in. And then when they sit down, I never offer to assist them and lift their legs, because in doing that, I'm missing part of my assessment. Can they get their legs on the bed? Mm-hmm. And if they can't, what joint is it? And then I'm also have them, before they lift their legs, if it's a leg wound, I'll have them take off their shoes and socks. What color are their feet? And does the color change when they get up, their legs get up on the bed, right? So I'm watching them from the moment they come in. And then I'll ask them, why are you here? Because I know why they were referred, but what I want to know what the patient understands in terms of why they're there. And then I'll ask them what you've tried. What have you tried? What's worked before? To kind of get an understanding of their health journey a little bit in terms of the wound itself, but also of their current health. Mm-hmm. You know, what are your challenges? That sort of thing. What's probably not at the first visit, but eventually I'll ask about their home life, a little chit chat, because it does tell you a lot about what's going on at home.
Yeah,
it's kind of useful to know, but often that's a little too much at the first visit. Then I'd explain my role, a clinical nurse specialist, and I'm just here to offer additional support. And if that's okay, and they say, you know, usually they say yes. But before they got there, I would have read their Meditech reports, my referral, any physician consults that they've had. If they're in Pixelair, I would have gone through and had a look at, have they ever had a wound in this area before? what worked in the past, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And then when I'm looking at the wound itself, depending where it is on the body, I'm not just looking at the wound, but the skin around it. And the one piece I think people forget to do is touch them. Ask first and then touch the skin. Does it feel firm? Does it feel kind of spongy? Does it hurt? You need to touch the client, and you need to mm-hmm. touch around the wound to see what you're looking at. Because it's the 6 inches around the wound itself or the peri wound, you want to kind of have an idea what it looks like. And then when I'm looking specifically at the wound, I'm looking at the edges of the wound, mm-hmm. because if they're full of slough or dry drainage, then those cells can't grow across the wound right now. They're kind of like plugged. It's like a bit like mm-hmm. a cork. So I'm looking at that to see what the edges look like. And if the edges are flat or raised, because raised edges are inflamed, is there something else going on? Then I'm looking at the base of the wound. How deep is it? Is it a cliff? Because it's a cliff and there's no tissue at the bottom, then it can't grow up. So it's going to be slower. Mm-hmm. If it's sloped and the edges touch at the bottom, then I know that it's going to heal from the bottom up as well as across. But the condition of the wound is it slough, meaning dead tissue? Is it red, bumpy, healthy granulation tissue with new blood vessels and working mm-hmm. towards healing? Or is it flat, red tissue saying, well, the body kind of stalled and it's not trying too hard right now? You know, and in terms of drainage, what it looks like, is it thick? Is it thin? Is there blood? That sort of thing, just the general stuff of the wound, especially the first assessment. And then after that, I'm really looking to see, is it the same, better or worse?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So is it the same as the last time they came? Because sometimes that's the best you can hope for, and that's okay. And if it's trending better, great, then I have the right plan. But if I'm finding, say, the skin is kind of wet, then my options would be, okay, why? Did something change in the patient? And if nothing's mm-hmm. changed, maybe my dressing wasn't absorbent enough. Maybe the product I put in the wound wasn't absorbed. So I can either go with a bigger bandage or see them more often. So in the current environment, I tend to go mm-hmm. with the bigger bandage because it can hold mm-hmm. more drainage. And then I ask the patient, you know, what's important to you? Are you wanting this to heal right now? I was all gung-ho about healing a wound. And I wanted to wrap this guy's legs and everything. And he just wanted to go hunting in the bush. Mm-hmm. And he's like, really? I know it's on my leg, but I'm going no matter what.
Yeah.
So my plan at the time then was a simple plan that he could do himself while he was away. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then he was to come back and see me after hunting season. And then we'd focus on healing. So at that time, my plan was to maintain the wound the way mm-hmm. it was, because that's what worked with his life right now and what was mm-hmm. important to him, and then come back. And I think at the first visit, you should also teach when you should seek medical advice. I know nobody wants to go. Sometimes you need to be quite blunt. Sometimes you need to, I was talking to a wound care expert today about a patient who has a wound on the foot, and we're looking at it and we're pretty sure it's in the bone or osteo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're pretty sure it's going to require an amputation, but the person's afraid and they don't want to go.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to go outside your comfort zone to tell the patient what they need to hear, and it might not be what they want to hear. So I'm comfortable saying, if you go to the hospital, you're going to lose your toe, but you'll save your foot.
Mm-hmm.
If you wait, I'm not sure they can save your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to have more of an impact. Okay, I don't want to go, but I'll go because yeah. I need to make sure that I'm not going to lose my whole foot, as opposed to just a toe, because the patient is looking for the positive in there and they really mm-hmm. want to hope that it will get better. And sometimes you just have to be quite direct, usually more so when you know somebody really well, you can do that.
Yes.
So, but when I'm looking at the wound, I'm not just looking at the wound itself, but the patient is at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then giving them a plan too when they go home to implement themselves, because at times appointments get canceled or something comes up and they can't come in, they should have a backup dressing plan at home that they can do themselves. So giving them supplies and teaching them that if you can't come back for any reason, this is the dressing that you can put on, and we'll see you at the next appointment.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's super. Thank you for that. That was very thorough. Can you explain to me, I'm an acute care nurse, so I know surgical wounds mostly, right. And pressure wounds, but I'm aware that you know, patients have wounds outside of acute care. So I'm wondering, can you tell me maybe about the, and of course not all wounds develop in acute care, but could you maybe tell me the trajectory of my patient that I have in the hospital, and then that patient goes out to the community, and how the healing of that wound looks like and what the care looks like for that patient? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So in acute care, you have the capacity often, if you're fully staffed and everything is great, to do wound care more often. So every day or more than once a day, because the patient's condition can change. And looking at the wound will give you a flag that something's going on with the client, not necessarily specifically the wound, but something going on with the client themselves. So we tend to do assessments more often, and we tend to use very basic products because you have the ability to change the dressing more often than you have to anyways for assessment. But once you go to community, the community, say a community clinic or home care nursing, their role is a short-term service, and their role is to assist the client in doing their care in terms of wounds. So their capacity to see somebody every day is almost non-existent. And it's not because it is a bad thing. It's because the more often you change the dressing, the higher risk of infection. So we really don't want to change the dressing every day in community, because we want to change it when the when the dressing needs to be changed. Not necessarily that we would need to assess them as often, because they are now at home, more stable, so they don't need that assessment every single day that they might have needed in the hospital. So they tend to go home, and then they're seen more often in the first week or so to make sure the plan is appropriate. And then the dressing change gets stretched to when does a body need it to be changed. It might be 3 days, it might be 5 days, it might be 7 days based on the person's status, and that can change. So if I'm doing quite well today, but I'm a diabetic and suddenly my blood sugars are higher for some reason, I have more drainage, then I might need to see you more often. So it's very client specific, but nursing assessment is usually done once a week. Not always, but initially for sure, you want to have a look and make sure your plan is working and is appropriate for your patient weekly in the beginning, at least weekly, sometimes more often if they're less stable. Community has enough products and different products, more aggressive, more advanced products than say the hospital, which is, allows them to stretch this dressing to 3 days, 5 days, 7 days safely. In terms of, there might have an antimicrobial that drops silver every single day, or maybe they have something that transfers fluid from one dressing to another, or they have a dressing that, you know, holds quite a bit of drainage, up to 2 liters, depending on, if needed, right? If it's needed. But again, there's costs associated with that. And some sites are having clients pay for their supplies per the BC Ministry of Health mandate, which is that health authorities must provide dressing supplies for 2 weeks. But beyond that, they don't have to. But they have chosen to. So depending where you are, what happens may be different. So careful if you're in acute, promising something that can't be done. Okay. And then when you go to long-term care, say I'm in a community client and my life situation and my ability to care for myself has changed, and we tried at home and it's not working, and I've gone to a long-term care setting, their supplies that they have are very minimal and very basic. So they're not going to be at the same level. I would say in terms of wounds, I would say the community clinics are your experts in terms of wound care and knowing their products and working with the patients. Where with long-term care, they're focused more on the patient's quality of life, and that's more of their focus, and helping the client to live their life with the supports they need. And their plans tend to be simpler, just because, again, they have more capacity to see daily if needed than, say, a community program. But at the same time, they don't have that level of expertise to be using the same volume and amount of specialty products. Right. So the education level, because their priorities are different. Right. So in community, it's to see the client when needed, reduce the nursing time with use of advanced products. And then they tend to see the client for reassessment to see if the plan is doing well. I'm not saying this is how they all run, but this is, in terms of wound healing, this is what I would be thinking for myself. It's a disservice to take away the client's independence. Right. So in community, you should be trying to maintain anything they can do for themselves, they should be doing for themselves.
it occurs to me that nurses managing wounds in the community require a tremendous amount of knowledge and expertise. And yes, they're really doing a lot. And I imagine a lot of autonomy in that type of work as well. So just want to recognize the work that's being done out there and congratulate your nurses out there and doing really important work for our patients.
Thank you. Yeah, they work at all sites work really hard.
Yes.
But in terms of wound care, there's a greater focus in community. It's a large population of wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the staff there can manage all kinds of wounds, from having to do compression wraps to doing vac therapy to, you know, debridement, all kinds of stuff that the RNs and LPNs do in community. I would say it's broader than, mm-hmm, say, an acute and long-term care.
Yeah,
just amazing. Because those acute has other people to help, other experts,
exactly,
to assist, exactly, on site. So where community, you're a little bit more autonomous. You're more autonomous, mm-hmm, and then you have to think of long-term care as having the least amount of resources on site, yes, for their support.
Yeah,
right. So their plans have to be practical.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you had mentioned earlier that something you think is important for people to know is to reach out for help sooner rather than later.
Yes.
How do I know? So what are some signs that tell me that I need more help with managing, okay, a wound? And then what should I do? Who should I call? How do I call them? What does that look like?
So it depends where you are, right? So if I'm in acute and I have somebody who has a vac machine on, per, mm-hmm, se, and the canister is full of blood, you turn off the machine, you leave the dressing alone, and you call the surgeon because this, mm-hmm, person has to go to the OR. Right. So the least you do, the better. But you do in acute, you do have. So if it's pressure related, pressure injury per se, it is your dietitian and your rehab department that heal pressure injuries. So those are your first go to's before, mm-hmm, you'd even go to the NSWOC, unless, mm-hmm, you're not sure if it is a pressure injury, because we need the offloading and the nutrition to help the individual. And then the wound care expert, or NSWA, they're called NSWA. They have many titles. They're called wound clinician. It's all the same person. Don't think there's four programs. Okay. I think sometimes people think there's multiple programs. Yep. So sometimes called wound clinician, sometimes called NSWOC, or nurse specialist in wound, ostomy, incontinence. Their job title is actually clinical practice consultant in, okay, wound, ostomy, incontinence. And in Meditech, sometimes they have them down as ET, which is enterostomal therapist.
Oh, okay.
But they still serve all of them. So they have all these, yes, titles. It's the same person. It's the same program. So I would send a referral. So in acute, you send your referrals through, mm-hmm, Meditech, and it goes to the wound care expert. But if you're worried about infection, go to the person who can write the order.
Yes.
So that would be the physician and their MR, most responsible physician, MRP, or the surgeon, or that sort of thing, if you're worried about an infection.
Okay.
If you're thinking that the wound care plan doesn't work for this patient, then that would be your wound care nurse. So what doesn't work? So I made a plan, I'm looking at it, and the wound is getting worse, or the skin is getting wet, or I have to change it more than once a day. I would reach out to your wound care expert to help you decide on a more effective or more efficient plan of care. So those are the more key, and then your infectious disease if required. But your NSWOC, mm-hmm, or your wound care clinician can help you determine if that referral is required. Okay. But so can your physician. So whoever comes to you first, that's what I would do.
Whoever you can get a hold of.
And if you need be, send them a referral. And the more information you put in that referral, because you're only required to put very minimal, mm-hmm, information in your referral. If you have the capacity or ability to put in a note that I've tried this, it's getting worse, or I think it might be a stage 3 pressure injury, but I'm not sure. The more information you can put in there, the more likely your client is to be a priority,
okay,
because they have to screen priority to determine who they're going to see, mm-hmm, first, because they tend to focus more on clients in ICU, in trauma, mm-hmm, clients, and clients in plastics generally, not, mm-hmm, always, or vascular clients. So you need to kind of state your case, yeah, to get that their focus towards your department. Mm-hmm. And you can that always give them a call too and just say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Is this something I need to worry about? And they can tell you as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could do that as well. In community, the rehab is limited because it's not on site. And so that would have to be pre-planned, so it would not be immediate. So you're more likely to get a quick response from your wound care nurse. And I would use your lovely MS Teams communication tool, right? So you should be, if you're charting in the right place, so if you're charting in Pixelair, that's where you chart, choose your flags carefully. So urgent is 24 to 48 hours. There's nothing like an emergency is an emergency. That's a physician or another team that you should be reaching out to. So in the lands of wounds, generally it's 24 to 48 hours is an urgent flag because it's generally not the wound itself that is, if it's an urgent, it's a patient. So the patient needs the attention from a medical professional. The NSWAC is not the same thing. Or the wound care nurse is not the same thing. They can't write a prescription. They cannot order diagnostic tests, that sort of thing. So if it's truly emergent, they have to follow the correct routes. But you can reach them through, they have tons. They have cell phones. They have email. They have MS Teams. They have Pixelair flags. So I think they're more accessible than you might think. It just people don't tend to phone. That's what I find in community. They tend to not call and ask their questions. And the thing with the Pixelair program itself is if I, as an NSWAC at the time, or the wound care nurse, I'm saying working in one community, I'm on vacation and they can't get coverage, somebody is covering the Pixelair. Another wound expert from another community will be covering that. So sometimes the best to just put it in your standard charting and flag appropriately, and you will get a response. But you have to remember what's urgent to you or as an RN might not be the most urgent thing that day for that expert. So it's not that they're ignoring you, it's just that there's another priority and they will get to your client in a timely manner. But I personally liked it when in the community setting when someone said it in Teams, hey, here's a Pixelair number, I'm going to call you, can I call you in 10 minutes? Because then I can have a look at the chart before we have a discussion if you need an answer quickly. But again, it is the nurse in all settings who can make the assessment, determine a plan of care, choose a product, that sort of thing. It's not the role of the NSWAC to do that. It's the role of the NSWAC to assist you if your plan's not working or if you have concerns about the wound itself. So if I'm writing a recommendation, say, in a community setting or say even a long-term care setting, because there are more of recommendations in those settings. If you don't have what I'm recommending, or if you feel it's not appropriate for the patient, I'm not going to be offended. But put down your rationale so that I don't think, oh, I wonder why they're not following my plan. Yeah. So you just have to say, oh, we've used that before on the client and it doesn't work. Or you did not know that at this that's something the client's not interested in. Oh, okay, no problem. So the more you let them know, the better the plan will be. And in long-term care, asking for help, ask as soon as possible, ask early, because if we can, we like to track a trend. So are they trending to the good? Are they trending to the bad? Or are they staying the same? And that gives us a lot of information. So even if you do reach out initially and you feel like you're doing pretty well and you don't need input for a while, that's okay. But at least we have a baseline so that when something changes, I have something to compare it to. So we need a baseline to compare it to make a plan. If you call me today, I've never heard of the patient before and I have no background information, it's very difficult for me to make an effective plan because I have nothing to base this on in terms of comparison. And what may look like a significant wound to you, and it is in your practice and your experience, and I'm not saying that it isn't, I'm saying it might be something that I think the wound care nurse would say, oh yeah, I can easily help you with a plan because I've seen it before.
So that's great.
They need to reach out earlier. Everybody does, actually. And in acute, reach out to the right team based on what it is in terms of the patient's health, because it's not necessarily just the wound.
That's good advice. Could you comment on the NSWACs or the practice consultants, the scope or the breadth of their work? And what I'm trying to understand is I don't think that there is a room in a hospital or in a community where there is 10 NSWACs sitting there waiting for your phone call. Could you give me an understanding of kind of their commitments, what else is going on on their time that I could consider when I'm not hearing back right away.
So thing with that, with the wound care experts or NSWACs in interior health, is that they serve a region or a large area.
Okay.
So if I'm RH as an acute care site, for an example, they've had two part-time NSWACs working there for some time, and they serve every single unit on every floor. So they're doing consultation on every floor. They're doing staff education for every unit. They are doing provincial work in terms of ensuring that our current work that we do in interior health is current. They might be doing trials or research projects. They're involved in the provincial documents that are created by the BC Skin and Wound Committees through provincial PHSA. What's the provincial health service area? So they do provincial work as well. They're available to any physician, right?
Okay.
So if a physician has a question, then I'll assist them with their questions. They're responsible to ensuring that any vac machines or equipment that is being used appropriately. They could have a manager ask them about their budget in terms of products and may ask them for recommendations. So if there's something that's needed that's not on top up or not a standard use product, then the NSWAC is usually asked to determine if this is appropriate and actually required. Do we not have something else on top up that we could use, because we have contracts in place with vendors that we have to honor. So they're aware of that kind of stuff. Like this, we promised 80% of our products will be of a certain vendor and 20% from others.
Okay.
They're aware of that kind of stuff. The average person doesn't need to know that, but that's kind of some of the work that they do. They mentor NSWAC students. They mentor other students. They're responsible for evaluating what trends they might be noticing in terms of needs for education or units that need more support, and then reaching out to those units to see how they can assist. All our education tools and documents are reviewed by them to ensure that it aligns with what their staff need. They do quite a bit. So the actual consultation is a small part of the job. So in acute, they do more consultation than, say, other sites. I'd say a large portion of their jobs tends to be consults, but they don't consult just because. It should be valid, right? Because if they're seeing a scab, per se, because the patient wants that somebody see it when it's not required, then the person who has a more significant injury isn't going to be seen. So not saying the person who is worried isn't a priority, it's just that they're lower down in the list, and maybe the person on the unit can reassure the patient that, yes, this is progressing as need be.
Well, they do everything, it sounds like. And so that can be valuable to have in mind, right, when we're calling on on folks to have perspective.
And they're also there to teach. So if you say, come, I need you to see my patient, we kind of expect you to be there so that we can, who are we going to share this consult with?
Yeah.
somebody needs to be there to receive the consult and the recommendation and have a discussion about the patient. Community as well is the same, right? Community just is a little bit broader. So outside their clinics, they will assist the community clinics, nursing clinics, long-term care nurses. Maybe they'll reach out for rehab. They'll work with First Nations. They'll work with any program, actually, and teach anybody who needs the assistance. But again, they're going to review what they're currently working on, whether it's a priority or not. But teaching is really the ideal, and the goal of the program is to teach nurses so that they can independently feel comfortable implementing their own plans and then reaching out for the gray. Like the NSWACs are great at the gray. So you read the CDST or the guideline and you have a good understanding and you're going, oh, this sounds good, but I don't think it's going to work for my patient. So that's why they're there. It's for the gray to do the exceptions. For this client, in this instance, we're going to do this. And that's not something we're going to do for everybody, but we're going to do this for this person because of these reasons. So they're really good at the gray.
It's an interesting job, isn't it? Interesting and very, very busy and big, lots of responsibility.
Yes. So theirs is site specific. So they're going to help you. And I am system specific. So if it's something IH wide, that would be me. And if it's in your community, it would be your wound care team. So I make the resources for them, basically. And then they are the ones who have on the ground, on the hands-on and on the ground information as to what's trending and what's changing in mm-hmm. the work sites. And then that way we can update things so that they're current, as opposed mm-hmm. to staff having things that are outdated or not value to them at this mm-hmm. time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have another big question. I don't think it's quite as big as how do wounds heal, but what about wound prevention? Is there anything new? I feel like we always hear lots about pressure injuries. Is there anything new? Yeah. I'm assuming it's still a problem. What can you tell us?
So pressure injury prevention is a requirement of accreditation, right? So it's very important to accreditation. And there are things that you can do that are really simple. It doesn't have to be big, right? If you notice that a person cannot move, then they're at risk for pressure injury. Mm-hmm. Heels are the number two pressure injury. That's a big one. And if your mobility or your ability to change, so if I was at home and I fell and I broke my hip, possibly, now I can't mobilize in the way I did before. Mm-hmm. So I'm at high risk, and that's probably going to happen. My pressure injury is probably going to start in the first 2 days. So skin inspections, just having a look at their skin is really that simple. Mm-hmm. So you're there and you're turning them, scan your eyes down the body, have a look and feel the back of the head and have a look at the ears. So there's that visual skin inspection, which you're probably doing, but you're not formally doing. Yeah. And then when you notice some redness, acting on it quickly.
Okay.
So reaching out to your rehab time right away instead of waiting to see if it becomes something worse. Mm-hmm. Start early. Not having too many surfaces on the bed. So if the rehab comes in and they say, oh, we're going to put you on this nice offloading mattress. Mm-hmm. If I put a fabric soaker pad, those mm-hmm. blue and white ones on the bed, I just turned it back into a regular mattress. Mm-hmm. So now that surface is not doing what it's supposed to do, because you should only have two layers under your patient. A sheet is a layer. Mm-hmm. Right? So if I put a sheet and then I put them in a brief, that's another layer. And then I put them on a soaker pad and then I have a transfer sheet. Once you hit more than two layers, you increase the risk of pressure injury by another 50%. Oh, wow. So the resource that you just used, you just nullified the resource that you put in place for the patient. So really to think about, do I really need it? And is there something better?
Well, I think that's really important, easily forgotten about those special surfaces, that we can very easily cancel them out, can't we?
Yes.
With extra linen. Yeah.
Our well-intended, making sure the patient is comfortable and the surface is protected, we're actually nullifying the fact that the product that we put there in the first place. And it's sitting people up, even if you have getting them up, sitting in a chair, really important for their psyche. Because there's mm-hmm. evidence to say they start to get depressed within 20 minutes mm-hmm. of being bedbound. So having them sit in a chair. Nutrition, again, I hate to say it. Yep. Nutrition is so important. And if you are unable to do a skin inspection and the family is there and they're comfortable, you know, you could say, hey, every time you come in, can you do me a favor and have a look mm-hmm. at your mom's heels? Or can you have a look and let me know if things are turning red or if there's a problem? Mm-hmm. Because if you think of it, if you're how many times if you're sitting or laying down, do you shift?
Now, all the time, constantly.
Yeah. So you have a sore spot and you cannot shift. Mm-hmm. Right. So some people don't have the ability to let you know it hurts. And it can happen really quickly too if they're deconditioned, like in ICU. You can do everything right and still have a pressure injury. Body sweat too, right? Skin hygiene is a big one. So when you're doing the personal hygiene every day, if you can have a look at the skin while they're doing that and washing up, and you say, hey, I'm just doing my quick little skin check, can I have a look? And have a look at their back and back of their legs or heels, if they're laying on their sides, there's points on the side of the body, and just mm-hmm. have a quick look. And if you see something, act early.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the big one, is acting right away, because if you have a stage one or two, that can, which is, you know, not really all the way through the skin, you can mm-hmm. heal quickly. But if you have a 3 and 4, that's going to take months, mm-hmm. months and months, maybe years, and mm-hmm. affect their quality of life. But keep in mind, though, too, you can still do everything right and it might still occur. And we know that. And if you want to do me a favor, please do a PSLS every time you see a stage 1, 2, 3, or 4. So a non-blanchable skin.
Okay.
For the stage 1, stage 2, the skin is broken and open, kind of like a road rash, but not, you don't see any slough, right? Mm-hmm. Stage 3, you're going to see slough in the wound because you've gone through the skin. So you might see red tissue or whatever, but you're going to see it's gone through the skin. In stage four, you see structures, bones, tendons, that sort of thing. If you put in a PSLS, my program, Skin and Wound, we will love you because that will help us justify the importance of education and the need for funding. So if we can prove that there's trending or that there's equipment required and lots of threes and fours, and because if we don't know they're happening, we can't say, hey, we need some funding for equipment because we need to offload these people. But how do we do that if we don't have evidence to prove that that is something that our clients are experiencing? Right. And let them know too, I'm not sure how bad your pressure injury is until the wound is cleaned.
Yeah.
So right now I can't tell you, and I'm hoping that it's just superficial, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
But it's your nutrition, it's your dietitian and your rehab that heal pressure injuries and prevent them. There are like go-to heroes of pressure injury prevention. And sometimes we reach out to them way too late. They should be our first reach out when we see the redness, not once it's open to a wound. Early on is the way to get that done.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
And now I know we're coming to the end of our time here. I could talk to you all day, but I just want to know if there are nurses out there listening who want to learn more about wound care or are really interested in this topic, can you point us to some of your favorite resources? Are there things like, you know, national groups or conferences or websites? What do you suggest?
So Wounds Canada is a really reliable source, and a lot of our documents will be resourced to that. We always prefer Canadian first if we can. And they have annual conferences, 1 year on eastern side of Canada, the next year on the western side of Canada. Nurses Specialized Wound Ostomy Continents Canada, it's an association. They also have annual conferences, and they'll do the same thing. One side, like last year, was in Eastern Canada. This year, it's in Calgary. If you are dealing, say, with an ostomy, most of the Hollister, which is a company that provides our supplies, has some good resources online.
Oh, great.
And lots of good patient teaching resources. There's a Connecting Learners with Knowledge website. So www.connectingclwk.ca.
Okay.
But first, you need to go onto the IH site and see what ones are supported by our site. But if you're just going for general learning, it's a good place, and you don't have to be at work to have a look at that site. Anyone can look at that. And then on our wound care page on the upper right-hand corner, there's a calendar, and you can see what upcoming virtual or face-to-face educations are available. And come. Anyone can come, and you can come more than once. Or you can reach out to me, and I'll help connect you
with
our resources. Yeah.
That's super. And now, Marianne, before I let you go, is there anything that you haven't had a chance to share, but you think is important for nurses to know about wound and skin?
It's just a dressing. It's not that exciting. Yeah. Relax. It's okay. If it's an incision line, you just want something on top to keep it clean and breathable. The outer dressing should always be clean.
Okay.
If there's a hole, you need to fill it. Unless, of course, you can't probe to base that we mentioned. And find out what your unit's most absorbent dressing is. So if you have something that's highly highly exudating, just go to that one first and put that one on.
Okay. It was been so nice chatting with you, Marianne. Thank you so much
You're
for your
welcome.
Time.
Okay. Thanks.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. We'd like to just thank, as always, Interior Health's Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. If you have any questions, concerns, or suggestions for future episodes, we would love to hear it. You can get hold of us at professionalpractice@interiorhealth.ca. And thank you to our marvelous Dwayne Walwin, who is our sound editor and does all the magic behind the scenes. And I hope that you will listen again soon. Bye-bye. That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.